Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, on this sunny Wednesday, August 20th. Happy birthday, Tucson, Arizona. 250 years
indeed.
Today for the city. It was probably a lot different place back then, huh, Matt?
Yeah, I think so. Horse and buggy and all sorts of the fashionable mode of transportation was the railroad.
Yeah, I don't even think there were Circle K's back then 250 years ago. You know, we're going to talk about some Circle K's a little later on the show today. We've got a great one lined up for everybody today. We're going to have Ben Ryan from Divine
yes.
Bovines going to join us in the studio in the next segment over here. We've also got American Sheriff Mark Lamb, former Pinal
yes.
County Sheriff, ran for Senate as well, too. We're going to find out what Mark's up to these days at the top of the second hour over here, and all kinds of fun things happening in the city of Tucson. Today, August 20th also marks move-in day for my youngest daughter at the dorms, the University of Arizona. Kira is going to Arbol de la Vida. Kind of a terrifying thought to think that my youngest daughter is literally going to college starting today. And so she's moving in at 12:30. They give you exactly half an hour, Matt. Like, you've got to schedule these times in 30-minute chunks to put all your possessions. Now, mind you, I don't know how hard it is to move that much IKEA furniture, but all of your possessions have to be done in 30 minutes and you're out. So pretty impressive that they've got these time slots lined up so that not every family hits all
sure.
the dorms at the exact same time with all the moving vans, as you can imagine, right?
Yeah, I saw a photo somewhere, news source or whatever, that a line of cars on the street on Speedway. So yes, there's a...
They're lining up and getting ready, and we are getting ready, of course, too, in the restaurant business. You know, really excited to see those students coming back as well, too. And, you know, it's kind of a bummer that, like, we come out and a U of A library stabbing yesterday, like, in the news, like,
yeah.
already. Like, here's my daughter. I'm worried about public safety.
Yeah,
and on our first day at the U of A, our showing is a stabbing at the library.
Right. That's not a good opening hand.
Oh, that hurts. That's
yeah.
really bad. You know, that's...
You know, the thing of it is, the thing that jumped off of the page on that story to me, and I don't believe it was fatal, and hopefully the victim's going to be okay quickly. So I don't know how serious the injuries were, but it was a stabbing, for gosh sakes. So it was bad enough. But even if it wasn't super bad, it was bad. The point is, neither of the people were associated with the university. That's what jumped off the page at me. Neither the victim nor the assailant were students or... They kind of implied that they were just like Tucsonans that were in there.
No, and sometimes it's maybe not even the location's fault. I mean, we don't know the full story on this one. This could have been a domestic violence incident that just happened to occur on right. campus rather than any fault of lack of security on the campus part. But nonetheless, as a father, a U of A dad over
yeah.
here, it's a little concerning to have that one be your kickoff plan for our kids starting school. But we're really excited about it because, you know, when the students come back, of course, it brings a lot of life and activity to the hospitality business. We've got the football. Football season starting up in just a few days over here, a week from Saturday. It'll be the U of A's first home game against the University of Hawaii. As we talked about last week on the show, coming up this Saturday is the IFL Championships as well, too. That's the Indoor Football League, right?
The Super Bowl of the Indoor Football League.
The Super Bowl of the Indoor Football League is happening here in Tucson, Arizona
right.
at the Tucson Convention Center, also known as the Boneyard when the Sugar Skulls are playing. But that's going to be 7:30 p.m. That's the Vegas Nighthawks against the Green Bay Blizzard. And so do get out there and go support that particular event. It would be great to fill the stands. I understand we've got a 3-year deal with the IFL to bring these events,
yeah.
this event to continue to happen here in Tucson. And they wanted something like the TCC, an 8,000-9,000 person arena that we could essentially fill up, right? You put this in in Glendale where the Cardinals play or something, and it might not exactly look as full. Kind of same sort of thing happens to restaurants for us, right? You build a 6,000 square foot restaurant and 100 people in it looks absolutely dead, but you got a 2,000 square foot restaurant and 100 people have a line out the door. We're doing that one in terms of stadiums here at the TCC for sure, but go check out the IFL Championship over there. I'm going to be going for the Nighthawks because, again, as a Lions fan, I can't root for anything from Green Bay.
Right.
Sorry for you cheeseheads out there. On Tucson News, you know, Ted Maxwell had a great show yesterday, brought in Attorney General candidate Warren Peterson. Warren was on my show a little less than a month ago as well, too. And on the news, like Tucson, both native and, of course, perennial candidate Rodney Glassman makes the news for campaign violations. Rodney, for those that don't know, is running against Warren Peterson in the Republican primary for attorney general in 2026. Now, that race is a year away. And we're already getting into campaign overpayment violations over here. Something. And it's news not just statewide, but this is news citywide as well, too, that Sadie Shaw had accused Kevin Dahl quite recently in the Ward 3 primary of also having contributed to the campaign. And in both cases, they're blaming credit card fees in a way that if you contribute to this candidate online via credit card, there might be a 2.5% or 3% or 4% fee. We're seeing those fees pop up everywhere across the world. Almost every purveyor that we pay in the restaurant business has a credit card fee associated with it. I now see this on the fine print of so many different restaurant menus that there's a credit card fee aligned on the bottom. But this is really affecting campaign finance, because if you're limited, as campaign contributions to Mr. Glassman were in 2024, if you're limited to $5,400, but yet you contributed $5,400 plus, let's say, 3%, you've actually over-contributed. Now, is that a mortal sin worthy of being booted off the ballot and crushed? No, probably not. I don't think there was an intentional malfeasance with this. But Sadie Shaw's accused Kevin Dahl of doing the exact same thing with his campaign as well, too. And this one's getting really dicey, because not only was there supposed to be a recount process that was going to start today, and we were going to have this sort of Maury Povich-like court reveal on Friday to tell us, you know, whether or not she had was, you know, victorious in this race, as they're only separated by 19 total votes. But she's got a lawsuit now coming, not about the over contributions, although she's mentioned that in the press, but she's got one going on against Mr. Dahl's campaign and against, quite frankly, you know, our election system for flubbing over 700 ballots as well, too, saying that some of these voters had been disenfranchised by not getting the correct ballot, and that maybe they couldn't have cast a ballot in Ward 3. And essentially, this might have made up that difference of 19 votes. And so we got a mess, Matt.
I do. We talked about it, I think, a week or so ago. This is what happens when you have a flub like that. Well, if it's not a close election, it's hard to tie it back. We had the same thing in the 2022 election, I guess, with Hamadeh losing by maybe 100, less than 200 votes out of like 4 or 5 total million votes cast. And then there were reports of printers not working or the wrong kind of font being used, that maybe ballots weren't being processed correctly or something. Well, If you won by 100,000 votes, it's kind of hard to pin your loss on that. But when you lose by a couple of hundred votes, or in this case, 19 votes, and it was documented that a bunch of people got the wrong ballot, yeah, that's a problem. And the county and the city are just opening themselves up for this.
Yeah, the county recorder is yet again to blame for these particular situations. And this is the second election in a row that's had these problems. And when you get a 19-vote differential, it's kind of easy to make that argument that says, only 19 of those would have went the other direction. You know, we would have moved the needle over here.
Let's say the recount moves 6 votes in her favor, and then you'd say, well, it was 13 votes. You understand? Like anything that the recount resolves, all of a sudden it makes the problem even worse. What if just a couple of those people, you know, didn't vote because they were confused about the ballot they got?
Without a doubt. I mean, this is going to be a clunky situation for the city of Tucson to work their way through, especially when you've got a protected incumbent, too.
Sure.
I'm going to be watching this one with bated breath, quite frankly, to see who is the Democrat candidate coming out of Ward 3 over here.
Again, Grant, when you run for office, you put your own money into it. You put a lot of your time, you put your life on hold. They're not just going to roll over and say, well, it was 19 votes. I'll run again next time. You know, you put a lot into that. Any candidate who runs for office, who runs seriously for office, puts a lot into that. So then, yeah, they're going to fight it tooth and nail, especially if there's some sort of, you know, irregularity that that cropped up during the process.
Absolutely. So, as an entrepreneur, I appreciate and respect, you know, that grind that it takes to run for politics. I talk to candidates quite regularly.
You're putting your life out there. You're opening yourself. You know, my dad always used to joke about, hey, if you had, if you were too lazy to do a genealogy, a family tree study on yourself, just run for office and the world will do it for you.
Without
you understand?
A doubt. Yeah,
I mean, you're putting yourself out there publicly in ways that most people can't imagine.
And that's one of the reasons that I always try to intertwine the politics and the restaurant and entrepreneurial side of things, because when you open up a restaurant, you're putting yourself out there publicly as well, too. You do not want to read the comment section every morning when you wake up, trust me, on Yelp and Google and TripAdvisor and these sort of things. It's very similar to politics in that regard. We're going to take a quick break over here and hear for some great sponsors, but we come back, we're going to talk to somebody that's put himself out there. We're going to talk to somebody that's been in the grind, literally and proverbially, for a couple decades here in the Tucson restaurant scene. We're going to have Mr. Ben Ryan from Divine Bovine bringing you some of the best burgers in Tucson, talking local restaurant business when we come back. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we are lucky enough to be joined live in the KVOI studios by a man who I admire, one of the hardest working restaurateurs in all of Pima County, Mr. Ben Ryan, owner of Divine Bovine. Welcome back, Ben.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey, thanks for coming on the show with me today. It's the first time I got to do some live radio with you, my friend.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I appreciate you having me here, and it's always a blessing to be here and get a chance to talk to Tucson.
No, love it, love it. Why don't we start with breaking down a little bit of your restaurant history and background for the listeners that don't know who you are.
Right on. Well, you know, I'm born and raised here in Tucson and one of the originals and still love it here, absolutely. I just like everybody else in the restaurant world, I started out as a cook at Millie's Pancake House and way back in the day in high school, and you know, gently worked my way up through the fields and ended up at a restaurant called Daniel's. It was a great little Italian place, and it was started by Danny Scordato, but he had moved on by the time I got there. And
it was Jeff Fold and yeah. Jimmy Brewer.
And Jeff Fold and Jimmy Brewer. Oh, right on.
Yeah, I recall very well. St. Phillips Plaza.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great job. It definitely taught me a lot about food and taught me to appreciate and love it in a brand new way. And I spent about 2 years there. Loved it. Learned how to cook. Learned how to grow up a little bit there. And then I got married and ended up working at a hotel because I needed more money.
No, that makes sense. That's a good reason to leave the private sector sometime and go to some of the chains over here.
That's it. You know what? It was one of those. It broke me down. I'm like, oh, I'm doing this great fine dining, and now I'm at a hotel. But it was actually one of the better moves of my life. I ended up working at that hotel and for that group for about 7 years and traveled all over the country, learned how to cook Indian food, learned how to cater for tens of thousands of people. And it was definitely a growing up as a chef and learning to work hard and actually make it in the restaurant world. And at about 2006, they were going to sell those hotels. And, you know, at that point, it was either go back and work for somebody else or take a shot and open my own. So we opened the Brushfire Barbecue in the beginning of 2007.
Think about that timing again at the start of the Great Recession over there and the economy going backwards.
Oh, it was crazy. It was, you know, we put everything we had into it, and plus we borrowed more than we could possibly fathom. And then all of a sudden, everything shuts down. The world's crashing. You know, revenues are dying. But for us, it actually worked very well because those people who are out there spending $30, $40, $50, $60 on a meal were no longer doing that. And they now were spending $20 on a meal. So that regular average Joe sector of eating was actually increasing, and we were new on the field and we loved food and we were too dumb to understand food cost or anything else really. So we were like, make it the best possible, take care of customers no matter what. And we blew up. We went from, you know, a little restaurant that held eight little chairs in it, and we snuck in about 40 more chairs until the city told us not to. And we did really well. We ran with it. It was a blessing. Then come around 2011, we borrowed way more money and opened the second Brush Fire. And we ran both of them until 2017 and had a great time. And around 2017, they weren't fun anymore. And not that all jobs should be fun, but it absolutely should be fun. If you're not loving what you're doing, why are you doing it?
Well, especially the restaurant business, when you're talking about working an 80 to 100 hour work week, if it's grinding you up, if you're not getting some sort of utility out of this, it's going to be tough to wake up every morning.
Oh, it's the truth. You know, you get there and you're doing what you love, but at the same time, you have employees, you have cost, you have the building, you have the customers, you know, and all of it just grinds down on you and it eats your soul. And I remember I came home one day and I told my daughter, I was like, I'm so sorry I'm grumpy. She said, it's all right, Dad, we're used to it. And at that moment, I was like, nope, we're done. And it was about 2 weeks later, I had it up for sale. And I was like, I'm done. If it's going to make me a grumpy, unhappy person, that's not who I want to be. We put it up for sale and took about a year and a half to sell it. And we sold when we were at the top. We did a great job with it. And sold it to another gentleman who ran it until it closed last year or so. But then after that, I went and I opened Divine. And what a great move. I did it as something I wanted to do for fun. Burgers are less serious. I went from that 6,000 square foot to down to a little 2,000. And it's the right way to do it, 100%. I heard you talking a minute ago about, you know, a 6,000 square foot restaurant with 100 people in it. It does look empty. Even though you're cranking numbers, it looks empty.
Of course, you can have guests say, but you're only half full. Why is my food taking so long? And you want to be like, I'm sorry, we're 8,000 square feet, or in St. Phillips Plaza's case, a 20,000 square foot patio. Even half full might be 400, 500 people.
Yep, you're cranking it out. You're putting it as fast as you can. You have 30 employees working that night. And people are like, well, but look at all these empty seats. And you're just trudging along going, oh God, please slow down. Oh God, no more. Yeah, and but now running a small place, oh, it's great. You know, I have 20 employees. They're all handpicked. Most of my staff's been with me for years, and it's fun. Burgers are less serious. We goof off. We laugh. We joke. It's a great, great place to be, and the food's wonderful, and yeah, and I make more money there.
No, I commend you for this one because, you know, the burger space in general is a crowded field in restaurants, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you've got every bit of fast food to QSR to full service all offering a hamburger. I lament that there's hardly a restaurant in Tucson that doesn't have a hamburger, right? You can go to El Charro and they have a Charro Burguesa out there.
Everybody has it. It is definitely competition. The difference is we specialize it and we think we do it a little bit better. You know, a lot of people have it as the catch-all, as the, oh, there's nothing else on the menu, I guess I'll have a burger. Whereas us, we're like, there's nothing else on the menu, you're going to have a burger. And it's fun, too, and it's easy to play with. It's great quality. It's my favorite.
No, I think it's a really nice, approachable food group to work with. And you're right, coming out of the fine dining world, it's kind of a relief to lose some of that pomp and circumstance, right? You're not crumbing the tables over there and there's not a sommelier in any capacity. Like this makes a lot of sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's so much fun to do. And you know, it's iconic. Everybody's going to love a burger, no matter what, no matter what happens in the economy, no matter what's happening with food at this time of life, you know, burgers are still wanted. Burgers are still loved. And, yeah, we absolutely love doing it, and I'm 6.5 years into it, and I still love it.
So you guys opened up in 2019, right?
We
selling
did.
Brushfire in 2017. Going back briefly to Brushfire, because sure. I sold my first restaurant as well, too, after nearly a decade, and it closed down a number of years later, and it kind of broke my heart. A lot of people wrote me, and they were like, hey, look at that. Do you feel vindicated that after you left, your first restaurant changed hands, the concept moved a few years later? And I think they were thinking that I would get some utility out of this. Like, oh, well, that you ran it better than the subsequent operator and therefore it closed. And it actually like really hurt me. How did you feel about that?
Oh, God, I think you just nailed it. You know, I went through a lot when I sold it because I still loved it. And it was still a part of me from concept all the way to where it was when we sold it. So to see it go into somebody else's hands with such hope, and you know, the gentleman who bought it, his plan was to expand it and to grow it, and we were excited to watch what he was going to do with it, and then to see it slowly crash and dive, it broke my heart. It was like watching my dream, which was still alive and still growing and doing its thing, just dissolve. And it was sad, you know, to hear about the food quality going down, to hear about the service going down. It actually broke my heart. And so many people reached out to me throughout that time of selling it to the time when it closed. And I just had to tell him, I'm like, hey, it's not mine anymore. You know, I don't control it.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do in that situation. And I've always hypothesized that barbecue is a pretty tough concept to do. We've had, you know, John Aldecoa from Brother John's on many times.
Sure.
And, you know, it's easy to look at the price of brisket and go, oh my goodness, this is actually quite an expensive product with a high food cost. But yet you think of it as lowbrow, white, you know, and red checkered tablecloths, the roll of paper towels, the squeeze bottles, and you're like, oh, this is inexpensive, but it's actually an expensive product.
It's very expensive, and we jumped into it, you know, 2007, brisket was $1.14 a pound, and you know, we're like, oh, this is great. We didn't realize you're going to lose over 50% by the time it's done, not including any sauce, seasoning, anything else that goes on to it. When we sold it, brisket was hanging out at about $5 a pound. And, you know, yeah, it was a 10-year time span from the beginning to the end. But at $5 a pound, you know, and you lose 50%, you're at $10 a pound minimum, which puts you up at about $40 a pound where you should be selling it at. And at $40, people are like, well, it's brisket. Well, why? You're only paying a couple dollars for it. Why are you charging me so much? And they don't see what really goes on behind the and meat fluctuates too. So, you know, one week you're at that five a pound, the next week, you know, it's through the roof.
Without a doubt. It's certainly a really challenging segment in the restaurant business. And the fact that you made it a decade over there is absolutely fantastic, because that is not, I repeat, not an easy segment to do, particularly in any semblance of full or even limited service at all. That's not like a Dickies or something along these lines. Like, this is a challenging, challenging segment.
Oh, I agree, which is why burgers is so much fun now.
So when we come back after the break, we're going to break down a little bit more of Divine Bovine, some of the burger selections that Ben's got, some of the challenges he's had operating his restaurant inside the city of Tucson. A more fascinating restaurant conversation coming up. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Ben Ryan, owner of Divine Bovine, on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we've got the pleasure this morning of having Mr. Ben Ryan, the owner of Divine Bovine, some of the best burgers in all of Southern Arizona. And he is joining us this morning to talk about some of the fun challenges of operating a restaurant in Southern Arizona in Tucson over here. You've got almost 6.5 years, 7 years under your belt now at Divine Bovine.
Yeah, we're at about 6.5, and it might feel like 12, but it is only 6.5. But it went fast. It's hard to believe that we've been around that long so far.
So let's talk about site selection over here, right? There's a lot of empty locations these days in Tucson when you drive by commercial strip centers and whatnot. I feel like we've got 123, 124, 24-hour smoke shops at this point.
Right.
What made you choose that particular location that Divine Bovine's in right now in Wilmot?
Well, you know, it was a little bit of pure dumb luck for me. Oh, apologize. My alarm's telling me to wake up.
That's a true restaurateur right there. That's actually still pretty early for a restaurant guy.
Absolutely. You know, picking the right spot, everybody says location, 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 but it's very true. And I was blessed with mine, to be honest. I was taking a break from the restaurant world and enjoying a little bit of me time. And I got the phone call about that location. And they reached out to me, and I said, no, I'm not going to open a restaurant right now. I want a break. And they're like, Ben, we really want you. And I was like, well,
you said that with such a deep and convincing voice.
It was true. I mean, the way that conversation went was very interesting, because I really wasn't looking for a spot, and beyond always looking for a spot. And they're like, look, you know, we want you there. We think you'll do a great job. And I was like, well, make me a deal that's so good I won't negotiate. And they called me back about 3 hours later, and they said, here's your deal. And it was one of those that I just kind of shut up, and I said, I will take it. And then they're like, well, what are you going to put there? And I'm like, I don't know. I wasn't opening a restaurant an hour ago. And that's how I actually got the spot. And I think that comes a lot from just being a good person in Tucson. We're such a tight-knit community that when you're a good person and people know you well and you've always treated people right, that good things come to you because of it. But in the reason why I took that spot, it's a freestanding building. It's on a busy corner, you know, Speedway and Wilmot right there. And luckily we have a couple of quality anchors, you know, Beyond Bread. They're just they're wonderful.
And, Shelby's a legend. I mean, he's been doing it now for decades here.
Absolutely. You know, you see him with that restaurateur look on his face, carrying a binder full of papers, and, you know, great guy. And there's such a good pull in that neighborhood that I was like, oh, this is it. And to have my own little freestanding spot where I could be left alone and just, you know, ignored was wonderful. And it was built out most of the way. It was a La Salsa, and he was getting ready to be done with what he was doing. So, you know, to take it over and just do minor work to it, put a new layer of paint on it and open it back up was an absolute blessing in cost and everything else. I opened it for less money than I opened the first brush fire.
Wild. You know? Well, that's great. That's the thing about getting a second or third generation restaurant space. When that kitchen is already built out like that, that can save you some buku bucks over here.
Oh, absolutely. And luckily, the guy who built it put in some money when he built it. So the equipment that was there and the structure of the building was actually very solid. So, you know, I did have to put money into it and a decent amount, but at the same time, it had its nuts and bolts. And that made it a lot easier to operate. But also, it led to other challenges because there was fixtures there. And so I could either destroy the center island or I could find a way to mold my menu, my workflow, my kitchen around it. And so I'm cheap, and so I decided to mold my workflow around it.
Let's go with frugal.
I like
economical,
that.
You know? Right? There's a better word than just cheap.
Absolutely. You know, my kids might not agree, but at the same time, you know, it's the right way to do it because in our world, there's so thin profit margins, we have to respect every dollar. And even at this point in my life, if there's a penny on the floor, I pick it up because I've worked hard for my pennies.
No, you certainly have. With you know, 3 decades of experience in the restaurant business, you have worked hard for your pennies. One of the things I notice about Divine Bovine is your tagline, right? I think a lot about restaurant taglines, like what it says underneath the name of your establishment really defines who you are. Does it kitchen and bar and grill? Is it, you know, cocktails and libations, you know, trying to get a little hipster yep. over here? And you guys are tasty burgers and buckets of beer. Can you tell me about that tagline?
Absolutely. You know, I wanted to keep it a little less serious, and burgers are fun. And we wanted tasty burgers. I wanted people to know that what they're getting is not a normal burger. It's something special. It's tasty. You want to eat it, and you're like, oh, wow, that's a tasty burger. And buckets of beer. Who doesn't love buckets of beer? And it's one of those things that when I came up with it, I was like, this feels right. It sounds right. And it fit what I wanted to do. I wanted people to come in, get a burger that was beyond what they normally had, grab a bucket, we'll throw a couple of beers in it, throw some ice in it for you, and you can sit at your table and we'll leave you alone. You can eat your burger and drink your beers in peace. And that was kind of the idea behind it.
No servers with 15 pieces of flair over here? That's right? Such a shocking difference.
Oh, it absolutely is. You know, when I go out to eat, I'm either in the mode where I want fantastic service or I want near zero service. And we kind of do a little bit of both. We're going to give you fantastic service. We're going to take care of you at the counter. Once you're sitting down, we're going to get you anything we need or you need. We don't want you to have to get up except for your beverage. And we'll take care of you from there. And then we leave you alone. And our spot's small enough that we can watch your face. We can watch what you're doing. And if you're doing the look around the room or you're looking at your hands, we know we need to go back and address you and do whatever we need to help you out with that. But at the same time, we don't want to get your drink. I think in the restaurant world, that's actually one of the pinch points is, you know, you're sitting there and you're thirsty and you're like, oh God, I see the soda machine. I could just fill it up myself, but you got to wait for the server to come get it for you. And that was something that always annoyed me. So we let them go get their own drinks. And I think most people like it that way. They can do their own thing, grab their beverage and get on gone.
No, it makes total sense to me. I get it. It's what helps make like a quick service concept like this work. What do you think defines Divine Bovine's burgers, though, in such a crowded field? What's the difference in your product that's made you successful over the last 7 years?
You know, I love food and I love to eat. And I think that's really important. And I think a lot of people forget to put flavor first. You got a lot of people who want it to be flair or this or that. And me, I was like, we want flavor and delicious. And so I built the menu around myself. It was, how do I want to eat this? And over time, I've learned that if I like it, most people do, with the exception of mayonnaise. I hate mayonnaise. But you know what? The crowd loves it. So there's plenty of mayonnaise on the menu. But fresh ingredients, quality ingredients. We knew we wanted a big, thick burger in the world where everybody's transitioning to smash burgers. And they're delicious. I love them too. But for us, we wanted to stay at classic. We wanted super high quality ingredients. We wanted it to be a big, thick burger. just the right amount of messy in there. And we wanted it to be fresh and from scratch. And that was where I wanted to head to it. And, you know, we started there, and now where we're at now is completely blown up in the whole fresh scratch. We make our tater tots from scratch. We make all of our potatoes, whether it's fries, crisp, whatever, completely from scratch. About 98% of what we do is from scratch. We don't make ketchup, mustard, and mayonnaise, but we make everything else.
No, which is pretty neat, and so few places are doing that in today's world of partially manufactured foods, right? You could push a button on the Cisco or Shamrock app and essentially have prefab products delivered to your place of like medium quality, but a lot of the general public might not know. You go to a sports bar or something like that, I assure you, you're getting an awful lot of that.
Oh, 100%. And if you want to stand out, you have to do something different. You have to do something that others don't have. And that was one of the thoughts of everything we were going to do, somebody else does not have. And that makes it a little different. Plus, you know, if you're getting those beer battered fries or the Ever Crisp, you can get them at 97 restaurants now. Why come to me to get them? Whereas if you're getting a tater tot made from scratch or a triple fried fry, I'm the only one that can get it for you.
How do you handle temperature complaints? One of the tough things about selling, you know, grilled meats in some capacity is the guest wanting it cooked a very specific way. And burgers can be quite difficult, especially if they're sitting under a heat lamp for a moment or two, waiting for some other item to be paired with it. It kind of continues cooking as well, too. How do you deal with those challenges at Divine Bovine?
It's actually one of the hardest things we do. And so we attack it in a couple of points. First, we realize that what I view as medium and what somebody else views as medium might not be the same. Not that either one of us is right, but we have to teach them how we do it. And so when you order at the counter and if you come and you tell us, oh, I'd like mine medium well, we're going to tell you, okay, for us, that's the smallest amount of pink possible. And or if you want medium rare, for us, that's going to be a very red, slightly warm center. And that kind of sets the boundaries of what we're doing. And then our house rule is, and I hate to say it out loud, but if we're wrong and we mess up, we just shut up and make another one. And I tell every one of my employees this. I said, look, you know, the customer's not always right. The cashier's not always right. And the cook's not always right. But the end result is we want it to be right. So if they're not happy with whatever temperature they got, even if we nailed it, we just be quiet, make another one, because it doesn't matter. We want them to leave happy, and them being happy is more important than me being like, well, actually, a medium is blah, 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 because it doesn't matter. That and I keep my cooks, and I think that's actually a very important like restaurant lesson is keep your cooks. If you have great people, pay them more, treat them well, help them survive in life, help them grow as a human. And when you do that, they're going to stay for years because everybody needs a job. They might as well have a good one with somebody who actually cares about them and helps them out and helps them grow. And I view myself as I've cooked on the line since I was 17 and people helped me grow. And so now helping the next generation grow is probably one of the better parts of the job.
Without a doubt. Sage advice from Divine Bovine's Ben Ryan over here. We're going to have one more segment with Ben coming up after the break. Let's cut over to a couple of our great sponsors over here. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more local restaurant scene with Ben Ryan from Divine Bovine. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We've got one final segment with Chef Ben Ryan, owner of Divine Bovine. He's breaking down all kinds of tips and tricks to be and survive in the restaurant business here in Tucson. Welcome back, Ben.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, so when we're talking local restaurants over here, you're 7 years into this, but when you do get a rare day off, where do you and Ms. Ryan want to go celebrate a little time off away from Divine Bovine? Give me one of your local favorites over here.
Absolutely. You know, I go to Shish Kebab House quite a bit. It's one of those just simple, tuck yourself in the back, eat some delicious food. Absolutely love them there. She does such an amazing job. And then Nate's Italian Kitchen is another one that I just adore. Unfortunately, he's closed on Mondays, and I hate him dearly for that because that's my day off.
Right. This happens a lot with local restaurateurs, right? If you're a sole proprietorship, closing one day a week is kind of how it gets done.
Absolutely. It's how you get a little bit of a break. And we kept ourselves closed on Sunday for the first almost 2 years. And then, you know, revenue climbed and staff climbed. And I was like, all right, time to open it up for all seven.
It's not easy to do when you go 7 days a week, because where do you repaint, or where do you fix the plumbing, or where do you do, you know, the kind of work that you can't necessarily do in a dining room when it's open and populated with guests
seven days
a week as well, too. And Sunday is a tough day to close. I've always admired restaurateurs that close on Sunday in some capacity, because it's kind of the busiest brunch day shift of the week. Dan Scordato from Vivace famously just closes on Sunday. It doesn't matter. Even Mother's Day. Closed. Yep. It's a Sunday. I'm not open. And no, thank
I respect
you.
It and love it so much.
Yeah,
yeah. Hey. It's our third busiest day of the week, and we knew we had to get it open, but at the same time, I knew I needed sleep.
Sleep. What is this strange five-letter word that you're mentioning here on the radio? I'm not so sure that FCC regulations will allow you to talk about that as a restaurant.
Definitely a dirty restaurant word.
Without a doubt. Do you have any plans for future expansion? You think there could be divine bovine dose out here in some way, shape, or form? Some other divinities, perhaps?
You know, yes. So we always look for a new spot. And when the magic spot happens, then we're going to jump on it. We're not in a hurry, though. It's, you know, I used to want to rule the world, and now I really like being happy. And so when the right spot pops up, that's when we're going to jump on it. But you know, I learned don't force it. So when it happens, we'll just make it happen and we'll go do it. But our systems are really, you know, they're in place. We're structured really well. We're ready for it. It's just when it happens, it happens. And
where do you think this would be? I get a lot of reaching out from the far bedroom communities of Vail and of Marana and Oro Valley. And they're always like, why don't we have more local establishments, Grant? And I say, well, yeah, don't have the rooftops. And I got to get employees out there too. Like, would you expand somewhere like that, or do you think this would be midtown or downtown Tucson?
You know, I love that you said that, because we get it too. Everybody's like, oh, you'd make a million, billion, zillion dollars if you come out to Vail. And I was like, yeah, for about 6 months, and then there's just not enough people out in those areas. And I would love to, but no, it wouldn't work on the outskirts. So if we did a second one, we're talking like, you know, mid-Vail. It's definitely a very busy area out there, and people are eating. U of A, you know, go Cats, and anything by the U of A, if you do a great job and take care of the kids, you're going to do a great job. But those are the two that I really, really enjoy. And I'm not against, you know, Oro Valley, Marana. More Marana than Oro Valley.
I bet Divine Bovine would kick butt, like on University somewhere, like in a spot where like Johnny Rockets failed because it was like this godless, faceless chain, right?
Absolutely.
Sort of soulless. But I think a Divine Bovine in a smaller footprint than Johnny Rockets,
sure,
too, would actually be successful in a spot like that.
Oh, I think it'd do very well, which is why we just wait and we watch. And once it pops up, you know, we're not too close-minded. We'll just say, okay, that one looks like it'll work, and location, location, location. I don't want to have to hustle people to my location. I want them to magically find me and then just gravitate towards me.
Without a doubt. But then you've got to commute between those two locations as well, too. You're getting to enjoy that one-stop shopping right now.
Oh, I love it. Well, you know, a Divine Bovine's about 5 minutes from my house. And so I can go down midday and take a shower. It's pretty cool. But I also own, like, you know, Divine Bovine, Speedway, and Wilmot. I own Pure Pokey at Grant and Tankerverde, and one at Ina and Oracle. So I drive the town. And it is a long drive, but I really like living, like working close to home. It's beautiful.
Without a doubt. So you're already on the road either way. So with the two pokies, a second Divine Bovine could be in the cards over here, is what I'm sort of foreshadowing out of what you're telling me.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? When that spot happens, we're going to jump on it. And you know, I have such a good, solid crew that it's possible.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'd love to have you back on the show and talk about that one when you get to that point. Why don't you break down for our listeners where they can interact with you, Chef Ben Ryan, and find your products, sir?
Absolutely. You know, everybody come and join me at Speedway and Wilmot. We're tucked right behind the Beyond Bread and that Batteries Plus there. You know, we're serving Tucson's best burger. We're going to treat you well. We're going to make sure you leave fat and happy. And, you know, when you leave there, you'll be full, but you won't feel gross. And it's such a good product to come and try. If you've never had a homemade tater tot, I highly recommend it. And, you know, just as a catch for us, every summer we give away free milkshakes. It's too hot in Tucson, so it's our way of just contributing. So if you come in, you buy a burger, you buy a side, you get a free milkshake. And people love it. We go through thousands of them.
Wow, that's a heck of a promotion.
It really is. It's kind of one of those warm and fuzzy. And people ask me, like, well, did you make money on it? And I'm like, no, I'm giving away for free. But it makes me feel good, and it's fun. And and I make you moo for it. So you come up and moo, and we give you a milkshake.
So when does the summer end for the milkshake promotion over here? What's your definition of summer?
Oh, boy. You know what? Depends on how great the promotion is. But but we always go at least through August. And then, you know, September for restaurants is honestly one of the hardest months of the year. People forget about it. But it is the you will lose money this month. And so, you know, August is the hard cutoff, but if we want to, we'll run it through September if the weather still sucks.
I love it. Well, thank you, Ben, for joining us on The Morning Voice today. It's a pleasure having you on the show. Look forward to having you back sometime soon, my friend.
Anytime.
Get out there and enjoy Ben Ryan's food at Divine Bovine Speedway and Wilmot. Thank you, listeners. We've got a whole nother hour of The Morning Voice coming up. Sheriff Lamb coming up at 8:15. And after that, Matt and I are going to break down some of the interesting safety issues happening in the city of Tucson. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to hour two of The Morning Voice. We've got a great hour coming up for you over here every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m. You get us on The Morning Voice. On Mondays, you've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell, the general from SALC, bringing you the engagement hour. He had a great conversation yesterday with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. He's always bringing in heavy-hitting politicians to talk about local policies. On Wednesdays, you get me, 7 to 9 a.m., Food for Thought, the intersection of restaurants, business news, and politics in Southern Arizona. On Thursdays, Tom Moulton and the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And, of course, Dr. Ed Ackerley on Fridays, bringing you the wonders of the University of Arizona. As we talked about at the first hour, it's August 20th right now. It is go time in the Tucson restaurant scene and season. While certainly not the start of our full season, these couple week periods where the U of A comes back into session is, of course, the oasis of the desert of summer, right? Yes. There's a couple week little uptick over here, and it's starting right now. And so there are a couple openings of people that were lucky enough to time their restaurant openings to get open right around this time. In Vail, there's reports that a Rock and Roll Sushi has opened up at 10,165 East Vail Road. It's a chain, I get it, but as Ben talked about in the first hour, they are hungry for restaurants out there, both literally and proverbially, and so cool to see something else popping up in Vail. Chef Brian's Comfort Kitchen is opened in the Five Points area, just opened up a few days ago on 6th Avenue, and so that one is, it's 804B South 6th Avenue. Chef Brian's Comfort Kitchen has opened on Thursday, August 14th. So they just popped up between our last show as well, too. So we're really excited to have those ones popping up. We're getting a Stax Book Club on Broadway, 2920 East Broadway. They're going to be a local bookstore with light bites and coffee and whatnot. Sounds kind of a cool way to spend the afternoon and hang out in that Broadway Village area, sort of between where Sushi Garden is and some of the concepts that are Sidecar is also in that neck of the woods. Barrio Bakery right there. So Stax Book Club will be opening up shortly, at least by the beginning of the year. As well, it looks as if the Casino del Sol has named their Grant and I-10 location. And this is kind of an interesting one over here because they've named it Vahitaam, V-A-H-I, and then it's capital T-A-A apostrophe A-M. Now, it means three sons in the Yomi language of the Pasquayaki people. And I get that, but gosh, this is going to have to come with a bit of a pronunciation guide over here that the three sons area of Grant and I-10 is going to have that particular nomenclature. They're saying when they open up, and now they're saying early 2027, okay, that they will have over 500 hospitality employees. So pretty interesting. Wow. 500 jobs in Tucson. I mean, that's almost as much as Caterpillar right there, right? Or half as much as the aforementioned American Battery Factory. So this is a pretty big employer coming to Tucson, and so they have got a name going for that one. As well, I was paying attention to the liquor license applications because I'm weird like that, and it's my job to bring you news. Now, I get it. Liquor license applications and the associated hearings are probably like watching paint dry for most of you over there, but it's a great tell. It's where I get a lot of my gossip about what restaurants are coming in the future and where, because it's a very public process about what they have to do. I'm giving away some of my secrets over here for other food bloggers, but But I noticed on University Boulevard, the Bourbon Bent, the country bar location over there, is giving up its Series 6 location and rebranding as The Saddle with a Series 12. Now, the Series 6 is the bar license. The right. Series 12 is a restaurant license. So they essentially couldn't have a Series 6 in the location that they wanted, and in fact are applying for a Series 12 and rebranding as a restaurant with a new brand because Bourbon Bent couldn't operate as a Series 12 restaurant.
And this is on University?
Yes.
Okay.
They were most likely, and this is reading the tea leaves over here, but not achieving the previous restaurant goal of selling 40% food. If you have one of those restaurant licenses, you have to sell 40% food. It's more than just having a kitchen. To give you an idea, mathematically, we own the Maverick on the east side. It's got the bar license, but it's got a full kitchen. You can absolutely go in and get a burger. No disrespect to Ben, you know, from Divine Bovine over right. here. But we also have a fine burger over there.
You don't want to take too long of a break from your line dancing.
But we've got a full-service kitchen over there that is open every day of the week that we're open at the Maverick. However, the food sales at the Maverick are only about 10% of gross sales. It would never qualify for a restaurant license.
So that has a Series 6 license is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Primarily bar, Series 6. Series 12 is at least 40% food.
Yep. Okay. We saw this happen a couple years ago on the northwest side of town with Whiskey Roads was located in the former Macaroni Grill space on Ina, and they had to move and rebrand as well too because they had a Series 12 restaurant license and also didn't achieve the food sales required. And as such, they had to actually physically change locations because, and this is deep restaurant nerdery and I apologize, but there are certain zonings that will allow a restaurant and certain zonings that will allow a bar. Restaurant's pretty easy to get in. Most neighbors are pretty happy to have a restaurant in their neighborhood. It's sort of an amenity. But do you want that nightclub right behind your place? You might not, right? Squealing tires, late nights, all this sort of thing. And looking at the liquor license application, something that really struck me as interesting was the Circle K license that came up for debate last night at the city council meeting, which required almost 40 minutes of discussion over here. And we probably won't even finish this segment with how much I want to get into before we get into Mark Lamb, but it will tie in perfectly with public safety and security, of which I hope to talk to Mark about as well too. Circle K applied last night for the city of Tucson for a new liquor license for a brand new Circle K at Craycroft and Grant. There happens to be a Circle K right now.
There is.
On the northeast corner.
You bet.
It's an old one.
Yes.
They're looking at putting in a new Circle K at the former bank location that's now vacant at the southeast corner of Craycroft and Grant. And as such, they didn't apply for a new liquor license. They just applied to move their old one to this new location.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was met with an incredible amount of ire and neighborhood anger and vitriol. I watch a lot of these liquor license hearings because I apply for these sort of things.
Sure.
And most of the time, guys, these sit on like a consent agenda. It's just if there is no protest, the county or the city
just staff has signed off on it,
signs them all through. So you have an existing Circle K that's essentially a 40-year-old building. I think that one on Craycroft and Grant was actually built in 1991. But so many of these Circle Ks, Matt, are old, busted facilities. And it's one of the reasons that Circle K gets a bad rap compared to QT is, of course, the type of individuals that hang out around the Circle Ks and the violence and issues and police calls that happen to Circle Ks. At last night's meeting alone, last night's city council meeting, Councilman Paul Cunningham said that over 60% of their calls are related to Circle K locations in the city of Tucson. 60%.
Wow. A man who knows about struggles inside the liquor department at stores. Not that he was.
Paul used to work at a Circle K, actually, back in the 90s.
Apply the wrong thing.
And so I get where you're going there.
Walgreens incident of a couple Saturdays, for a couple Fridays ago.
Yes. And so Circle K is looking to reinvest in the city of Tucson and build a much nicer, newer Circle K, right? Like a better one.
Right.
They would close down their old busted one and they would build a new one. For all intensive purposes, you're just horse trading one for the other. Why wouldn't you want a improved, newer, better lit, more product?
That's a pretty
Circle
tight
K.
corner in there in terms of parking and everything where that Circle K is. That's a pretty tight footprint that they're on.
It, to me, would be a pretty logical trade. And yet yesterday, in a very public process, a number of speakers came up and heckled and cried and, of course, did the, let's call it Project Blue sort of thing going on over here. As Rex Scott called yesterday.
Project Blue on them.
Rex Scott called it a spectacle. And yesterday, a number of neighbors came and made a spectacle about their displeasure of this Circle K popping up. And that somehow this Circle K selling MIDI bottles was the problem. When was the last time you saw somebody experiencing homelessness, also experiencing alcohol? It's been a number of years. I don't see homeless people drinking 40 ounces of malt liquor anymore. I don't see them drinking mini bottles anymore. Quite frankly, like, this doesn't seem to be the problem anymore in the city of Tucson. It's no more than blaming the gun for shooting people rather than the people. The problem we have in the city of Tucson is, of course, the unsheltered population and the amount of drugs that are working their way through there, that they often hang out in well-lit establishments yep. that are open 24 hours a day.
It's not the airplane bottles of Finlandia, right?
I assure you, it's not the little Smirnoffs that are causing our problem right now in the city of Tucson. But if you would have listened to these old residents talking about it like as if this was the problem, like this was the thing we needed to fix. And last night, the city of Tucson denied that particular liquor license application for a new and improved Circle K, based not on the fact that it was going to be an improvement, but on the overall public sentiment against Circle Ks in Tucson. And I think that's a shame, and it's preventing it reinvestment into the local economy over here. We just chased off Project Blue, we chased off Amazon, and now we're chasing off Circle K. What's going to be left?
Let me tell you a little something about that bank building, because we just happened to drive by it the other night, and if this is the one I'm thinking of, every piece of glass on the front of that building is covered with plywood because they know there will be ingress from God knows who. You know, the folks wandering around the city will move in to the empty bank building. So if you drive, if this is the one I'm thinking of, because I think we just went by the other day, every piece of glass in the front of that thing is covered with plywood just to keep the homeless or whoever from breaking into it and squatting in there. Mm-hmm. And the city council says that is better. That is better than letting a Circle K move 100 feet.
Unbelievable, right? Well, let's take a quick break over here talking public safety. And we're going to, when we come back after the break, we're going to bring on somebody that knows a thing or two about public safety. We're going to bring on former Pinal County Sheriff Mark Lamb coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 AM, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice on Tucson's 250th birthday. We love talking local politics.
A lot of candles.
And it is truly a lot of candles. Might burn down a mountain just like our fireworks show every 4th of July over here. But we do love talking public safety over here in Tucson. We have so many challenges these days. And our next guest, we're lucky enough to have a call in from a man that knows a thing or two about public safety, a man with 500,000 Instagram followers, former Pinal County Sheriff and author, celebrity sheriff figure, the American Sheriff, Mr. Mark Lamb. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Hey, man, I appreciate the intro. I hope you're doing good, Grant. Thanks for having me on the show.
No, thanks for coming on today. We're excited to have you on the show. We could use some of your sheriff skills here, I think, in Pima County, if you're ready to pack up and I head a little further down to the south, my man.
I've heard that a couple times in the recent weeks.
Without a doubt. What are you up to these days?
So I've been doing some consulting, but I'm staying active in things that I'm passionate about. I'm working with FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, as a law enforcement advisor on border stuff. I work with a company called Vitania on mental health for our first responders, police officers, just to try to help them process all the stuff they see. Plus, I started a business, my adult business, is 10-7 Consulting, where we help law enforcement, veterans, and frankly, anybody that wants to start a business. We give you all the, we've got videos that teach you about business, what kind of structures, how to do it, marketing. And then we help you set up your first LLC, you have legal assistance, and that's at 107consulting.com, T-E-N-7consulting.com. So I'm staying busy, but I'm trying to stay out of the things that I love, and I'm glad to be on your radio show this morning.
No, we're happy to have you here. I've always appreciated the positivity that you've brought to the image of the Sheriff's Department, right? You've done such a great job over the year with the short form video content of these stops and these public interactions and how you handle things. And you've done a great job of improving over the last 8 years when you were Pinal County Sheriff, that staff morale and that staff retention, something that we struggle with here, both in Pima County and in the city of Tucson, where we continue to be undermanned. What's the difference between Sheriff Lamb and what we have going on down here in Pima County?
You know, look, anytime you have an agency or anything, it starts with the leadership. And then what we focused on was making sure that we took care of our people. We made sure that they were being paid appropriately. We made sure that they knew that they could do their job. Because, look, we make tough split-second decisions in this profession. And they have to know the leader at the top is their back, that they're going to stand up for them. As long as they're doing what's right, they're not doing anything illegal, immoral, or unethical, that the police chief and the sheriff are going to be there to back them up. And because we did that, and we did that, like you said, in such a public way, we did it on, you know, YouTube and Facebook, and we did it in so many different public avenues, it allowed us to really showcase that type of leadership, and people were drawn to it. They wanted to come work for us, and we did the best we could to make sure they were paid appropriately as well.
No, it's fantastic. And I'm sure the department misses you when you took the opportunity to run for Senate over there. And you got almost 300,000 votes in the Republican primary to be the Arizona senator. Do you think there's a future for more political positions for Sheriff Lamb?
You know, I don't know that I'm done with politics. It is kind of a rich man profession. It's really hard to do. When you're just a normal person, they've made it so difficult. Money is such a factor in it. I want to stay active in helping Arizona and this country. I'm a patriot first and foremost, but I'm not a politician. It wasn't something I wanted to get into. I just looked at the landscape on a national level and on a state level, and I thought, look, I bring the right skill set to deal with some of the issues we were dealing with last night, which was the border and a couple other things, rule of law. And I thought, who am I to sit back and do nothing when I have the ability? You know, there's that old Danish saying that he who has the ability has the responsibility. And so I decided to run. I was unsuccessful in the primary, but I don't regret, you know, getting in the arena. It didn't work out as far as getting into office, but it did work out since that, you know, we were able to talk about our message for 2 years all throughout the state. And look, it's just part of the process. There can only be one winner, and I wasn't it. But unfortunately, I did have to leave the sheriff's office at the end of my term. And that part was a little sad, but we're doing the best we can to stay active in different ways.
No, I think Sheriff Teeple is doing a great job up there in Pinal County right now. Big shoes to replace over there as well, too. But you've done a great job of continuing the messaging, right? We still see you on national news all the time talking about the border issues that we have here in southern Arizona. What changes have you seen since the start of the Trump administration, since we've had a whole different sheriff at the helm nationally over here? What differences are you seeing in Pinal County?
Oh, it's a huge difference. You know, Pinal County always will struggle because of the Indian reservation on the south end of the border. That's always going to present somewhat of a problem for Pinal County because they come through there and they dump out right into Pinal County. And that will always be a challenge for Pinal County. But what we have seen is we're not seeing those carloads of people and drugs coming up the I-10. You know, all we could go out and pull 6-7 stops in a morning of human load vehicles. And now all of a sudden that just changed. And what we're seeing now are bigger drug loads, which means they're not able to separate them out as much as they used to. We're seeing a ton of success. And then nationally, you've seen the numbers are lower than they've ever been, which is a huge thing as well. So I think that all across the board, it's been a very positive transition. These first 8 months have been very successful for this administration, and it's had a very positive impact on Arizona. And I see that even fentanyl poisonings are reducing as well. So those are the numbers you have to look at if you're going to weigh out how successful this administration is with their new changes to the border.
No, they certainly are bringing an aggressive, you know, force to rebuilding and reconstructing the uncompleted portions of their border wall. I just read yesterday that they were going to paint the entire thing black as well, too, to make it essentially hot as Hades in the middle of the day and more difficult to climb.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, look, anything they can do, especially things like that, that are probably not going to be super expensive. The big, beautiful bill, whether you like it, whether you don't, what I will tell you is it was very robust on the border security piece, whether it was whether it's the money for the technology or to continue to make adjustments to the wall and the infrastructure that's there, hiring more people all the way across the board. This is probably the most, not probably, it is the most aggressive approach financially we've seen from our government to address the border situation and frankly to fix what the last 4 years did. I keep reminding people, don't be angry with the guy who has to clean up on aisle 46, taking all these folks that came into this country illegally out of here. Be angry with the person that let them all in the first place, who just completely turned a blind eye to the law, what right for the American people. And now you've got a president that's got, not only has he got to fix that problem, he's got a myriad of other problems he's having to fix on a national and global level.
Well, we're excited to see some of those border fixes trickle their way into the city of Tucson, essentially reducing, hopefully, the trickle of fentanyl into the city, because it's been pretty rough. We've only got a couple minutes here left in this segment. What can we do better here in Pima County to make it more like Pinal, that seemingly has just beating us up and down with economic development and has a lot less of the unsheltered population as well, too?
You got to elect better people. I mean, look, we can't continue to elect the same type of people and expect a different result. That's the definition of insanity, is to keep doing the same thing but expect a different result. Look, the reality is the people we've been electing are not working. And so I think that adjusting course, and frankly, you know, a lot of these Republican candidates and the Republican cities have proven that they do much better upholding the rule of law, reducing crime. And I think that holy cities like Tucson, Pima will start to look and say, hey, we may not be on the same plane socially or whatever, economically, but we've got to make sure that we're safe. And that's, I think, the first rule of government. And so I would say, starting by electing leadership that is very, that they make it part of their campaign, that they are going to be strong on the rule of law, that which includes enforcing border security and making sure that people are not coming to this country illegally and that drugs aren't flowing in and fentanyl's not flowing in. But I think that's where it starts, Grant.
Without a doubt. Well, we thank you, Sheriff Lamb, for coming on The Morning Voice today. You can find Sheriff Lamb at American Sheriff on Instagram. Is there another place to engage with you real quick?
Yeah, kevinconsulting.com. That's TEN7consulting.com. And let us help you get a business set up. We're trying to change people's trajectory and give them purpose in this life.
Love it. Thank you so much, Sheriff Lamb. Look forward to hearing from you in the future. Sheriff Mark Lamb joining us on The Morning Voice. Don't go anywhere. We've got another half an hour coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice on this 250th birthday extravaganza show out here. Matt and I, before Sheriff Lamb came on, it was really great to have Mark Lamb on the show over here. What a great guy.
Sure was.
We were talking a little bit of public safety, and we were discussing the city council meeting last night where the city council denied the liquor license application of a new and improved, better Circle K that would have replaced
the hot dog rollers all cleaned off.
Yes.
Yeah, you know.
Absolutely. A new slushy machine. Like, this is right. This is big stuff over here. But all jokes aside, this is actually very important, because if we don't allow this reinvestment inside the city of Tucson, they're going to just take their dollars somewhere else, and we're going to have worse than Circle K's. I grew up, as I've said many times on this show, in Detroit, Michigan. And the Circle K's, the 7-Elevens of the world, eventually pulled out of Detroit because the crime got so bad that they couldn't even get insurance anymore. So many of their employees were murdered that truly, that they couldn't get any sort of liability insurance. And the local party stores, as they called them, became the realm of smaller family-owned establishments, but of course of a lesser quality than a brand new QT or Circle K build-out would ever be. And I think the community really suffered by not having you know, proper convenience stores there. I didn't realize until I was probably 15 or 16 years of age when I finally got an automobile and could drive out to the Detroit suburbs that all the stores there weren't behind 4 inches of bulletproof glass. Wow. And I feel like we're in the route for this right now in the city of Tucson if we continue to allow this to happen. Yesterday, the mayor and council put out a memorandum about VIVA, the Violence Interruption and Vitalization Act. And they've used VIVA as this way to identify hotspots based on a 2022 University of Cincinnati study that said if you nip these hotspots in the bud, you'll prevent crime at the city on a macroeconomic level. And so they picked 4 really rough intersections, brought these micro locations down to 500 square feet, and then tracked just the gun violence that happened in these particular locations. And of course, the gun violence, according to the study, went down slightly. But again, this is like using the murder rate as like this defining factor about whether crime is getting better or worse. It's really too small of a sample size to truly judge. You could put a police officer at each of these micro locations and stop the crime there, but just move it somewhere else.
Correct.
They parked a police officer, for example, in private security. He's been working the Circle K at Fort Lowell and Country Club, right? A pretty rough neck of the woods over there. Fort Lowell and Alvernon, excuse me. Pretty rough neck of the woods over there.
Right.
And you know what's happened? Well, the people have moved down the wash over to the Columbus Park and infested the park. And now they've had to shut down a portion of this park because all you did by squeezing that Circle K is move them just down the block. You didn't really solve anything by kicking these people out of this micro area.
You're telling me here, Grant, this is a hard concept to grasp. If you increase police presence in an area, that crime drops in that area. This is a mind-blowing concept. I'm having a hard time getting my brain wrapped around this. Now, what if you don't increase police coverage in an area? Would crime still go down, or does it have to have the cops?
Shocking that it may be to promote this sort of heresy on the air over here, but we reduced gun violence and only gun violence, which isn't necessarily our biggest problem in the city of Tucson. The murder rate isn't our biggest problem. It's really property crime and how we've allowed open air drug use and had this unsheltered population drag down business development and make things like the bus and these convenience stores incredibly unsafe and uncomfortable for our residents. But is it really the fault of the establishment? Does the 24-hour establishment's just existence alone cause crime? Do we not want to have those? Or is it the fentanyl that's on the streets that costs, between 50 cents and a dollar a pill? Is that what is causing the crime here in the city of Tucson? And the Circle K just happens to be the light at night, the drawing the moths in.
Well, I don't know, Grant. Las Vegas is open 24 hours a day as far as Las Vegas, Nevada. And I don't think on the strip where there's lots of police that, so is it really the 24-hour a day? And that's in concert with where you're going with this.
Right.
Yeah, there's...
I don't think it's the establishment's fault up front for selling quote-unquote mini bottles or selling tobacco or selling high-fructose corn syrup or selling Takis or Cool Ranch Doritos. All of these things are unhealthy if you really want to get into it, right? All of them, to a certain degree, have some negative effect on public health at a macroeconomic level, but we live in the United States. They absolutely have a right to sell these products. This is what their business license is. This is what their liquor license is. And to say that you can't even swap one Circle K for a better one because this is the problem, that Circle K is somehow at fault for this. I know they are rougher as a sweeping generalization than, say, the QTs out there, right? Chris DeSimone had a famous, on Halloween, the scariest Circle K in Tucson show every year. And it both makes me laugh and cry simultaneously because the convenience store is nothing more than the meeting point for where these real problems are. These problems were going to exist whether you had 10 Circle Ks or 20 Circle Ks, quite frankly. It's just they show up in the light a little better rather than happening in the darkness of a park or happening in the darkness of a wash or an abandoned apartment building in some capacity. And so to think that we can't build a new establishment that's got a better parking and better gas pumps and better food and beverage offerings and trade just one liquor license for the other. This isn't a bar liquor license. This isn't what we talked about with Bourbon Bent turning into the Saddle because they couldn't meet a restaurant requirement. This is nothing more than a smidgen of to-go liquor. It's probably represents less than 10% of the gross sales of a Circle K to begin with, but and especially if you include the gas in there, it's probably 5% or 3% of their gross sales. Is this alone reason to deny this kind of development? Are you going to stop public liquor consumption? Are you going to stop people from drinking high fructose corn syrup? Am I not going to eat Doritos because I can't have a Circle K over there? It's a real mistake to not allow Circle K to modernize. Let them go in and clean up some of these legacy stores that were built 40 or 50 years ago in some case when the world was a different place, when Tucson was a different place, when there was just a different measure of how we purchase things. Now that you need to have 20 gas pumps or 30 gas pumps to be competitive. Look at these Buc-ee's that are popping up all over the country, right? You don't even make any money on the gas. You just have that much convenient gas so that people do stop and come in. But as we talked about at the end of the last hour, there is a 0% chance, Matt, that mini bottles from Circle K are the fundamental cause of our homeless crisis, our drug crisis, people on the streets. It is no longer alcohol. No matter what you think about alcohol, whether you are, you know, part of the temperance movement or not, then I know I get in trouble on the show for talking about alcohol a little bit over there and get people hot and bothered when I talk about lowering the drinking age in some capacity. But at this point, we have legalized weed in the United States, in Arizona. This is legal. Yeah. And there's all kinds of chemical derivatives of it. Like, accept the fact that you're going to have alcohol just about everywhere. And what's the difference between having a Circle K and having a Safeway or a Total Wine or any of these other establishments that also sell liquor in a packaged environment? Only because it's open 24 hours. They also, for the record, Matt, can't sell liquor 24 hours. Like, it's,
that's true.
It stops at 2 a.m. Right? Yep. And can't come back until 6 a.m. either way. So like, where are the mini bottles like causing this particular problem? But if you watched the city council meeting yesterday, they touted this Viva report as we're making a difference on crime. Things are getting better because we've slightly reduced gun violence in the
that report proves that a fully staffed police force that is not handcuffed by city officials and elected city council members and mayor that are sent out to do a job to make the town safe is effective. This is a pilot project that you do need law enforcement.
Now, interestingly enough, during the conversations yesterday at the city council meeting, they mentioned the Viva Advisory Board.
Okay.
Now, who made up that Viva Advisory Board?
Do tell.
They actually mentioned who it was, and they said it was made up of city staff, community members, apartment owners, and resource providers. Take note what was missing from that statement, Matt. This is verbatim, right? What was missing was business owners.
Yeah.
There wasn't any on there because you're not welcome, unfortunately, often in the city of Tucson. I took my stepson golfing the other day down at Randolph, right, to the driving range, and we went and hit some balls. And on the way back up Alvernon, he wanted an ice cream from that new Dairy Queen they built there. And as I pulled in, there's plywood all over the glass windows. And I asked the employee as I was getting him a singular vanilla cone here from Dairy Queen. I said, what happened? And they said, oh, two nights ago, someone kicked in the glass and stole all of our registers and whatnot. Here's this brand new business. I get it, chain. I'm not here to die for the chains, but nobody deserves to have that happen to them.
Look at Ed Irving. He's opening Slice and Ice on Tancredi in a former and erstwhile EG's location. He's opening it there. I think he wanted to be open by July or August. That's now pushed out. He says he's getting close, but the place got ransacked. While he was remodeling it, all of his fixtures got broken into and his fixtures got taken.
Conveniently, absence from the Viva Advisory Board seems to be
right.
Business owners. And what's conveniently absent from the city of Tucson and infill? business infill development as well, too. Geez, I wonder if those are related. Mm-hmm. Why don't we take a quick break over here and come back with Matt? And I've got one more segment coming up with you on The Morning Voice. There's another restaurant closer that just came to me. I'm going to bring up to you as well, too. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk, guys. Welcome back to the final segment of The Morning Voice with your host, Grant Kruger. Love spending Wednesday mornings with all you out there listening, breaking down the latest and greatest that are happening in the Old Pueblo over here. Again, it is the 250th birthday of our city, which is pretty neat to think that we've been around longer than the United States by a year out there, which is pretty sweet there to think about, right? True story. You know, we're going to have our 250th anniversary next year on July 4th, right? Indeed. After 1776. So Tucson predates the United States by a year, which is pretty awesome.
Take that.
Right. But well, we were talking about before the break, a breaking news that another restaurant is going out of business, one sort of near and dear to my heart, and that is Transplant Pizza. They had a second location
at
River and La Cholla. It had been a serial griller spot for a while, I believe, and they had turned it into the second outpost of Transplant Pizza, and they just announced that they're closing this weekend. I have yet to talk to either of the Travises involved in that particular restaurant, and I love those guys, and I'm a little worried about them, quite frankly. They had downsized from the serial grillers on Speedway, that big one they had, and kind of moved back shop to the much smaller location they had where in that shopping center where the Transplant Pizza is on Speedway. And they've just announced the closing, or going to close this weekend, of the Transplant Pizza at River and La Cholla. And so an unfortunate bit of restaurant news out there, especially if you made it this far in the summer, like you're almost there. It's like dying in the desert on the way that you could see the oasis and like not quite getting there is a really unfortunate thing to happen. And I will look to
another place that had a huge scale shootout in the same parking lot several months ago, right?
Right.
At Speedway and Swan.
Yes, of course. In front of one of those smoke shops.
Nothing has come of that in terms of arrests or even, I don't even know if they have leads.
So we're concerned, as we talked about before the break, at this Viva report that came out yesterday from the Tucson City Council, a memorandum that they were going to stay on top of four micro locations. One is Grant and Alvernon. The second one is the South Campbell Avenue and Bilby Road intersection, and then East 22nd and Prudence, and then something just defined as the Fort Lowell Corridor, which I assume is pretty much just all of Fort Lowell from, like, say, Oracle to, right? I mean, quite frankly, the entirety, that doesn't sound like a micro location to me.
No.
That sounds like a macro location. But they've claimed that gun violence is slightly down in these locations based on police presence. But when you're only measuring the micro location and you have free transportation via our Sunlink bus system over here, did they just move? Did you just whack-a-mole and allow it to happen somewhere else? And I'm hypothesizing that yes, taking care of just the micro locations isn't going to get things done over here. If you're only measuring in these four micro spots at 500 square feet and you're using gun violence as the unit of measurement over here, a lot of bad things can happen to you that don't qualify as gun violence inside of the city of Tucson. Hatchet violence, for example, would stay outside of these reports because in spite of its relatively disturbing increase in frequency, it doesn't count as gun violence, right? And so I don't think the metrics are here to really make this work. I always joke that 62% of all statistics are made up on the spot, Matt. And quite frankly, like, this is one of those cases where I think we're playing with the math to make things look a little better than they really are. And what can we do to convince businesses to reinvest inside the city of Tucson limits? How do you not go to Oro Valley? How do you not go to Marana? How do you not go to Vail?
Sure.
When this kind of thing happens, when you basically say, not only am I going to let the public process trash a potential massive data center and all the employees and jobs that that creates, but we're also going to allow a public process to trash convenience store liquor licenses. I'd way rather have a Circle K than a 24-hour smoke shop any day of the week and twice on Sunday, right? It's a substantively better managed location than what might fill its bones in some capacity. And so when we run off businesses like this, particularly in a public process where we let 5, 6, 7 screamy neighbors define a zoning change for a developer or define a liquor license like that, we're not really existing in the democracy that we should, right? This is mob rule. We need to let the electeds make those decisions without having the public jeer and scream and call names and in some way, shape, or form think that they're exercising First Amendment rights when in reality they're creating a mob rule. And things just tend not to work out so well for municipalities that do that. And I think we're bearing the fruit of our decisions here in Southern Arizona and the city of Tucson when we continue to allow the denial of businesses that are willing to invest millions or hundreds of millions of dollars into our city, Matt. Who's going to be left?
Yeah. It's a great question. Did get some feedback from a listener. I'll try to find out a little bit more about it, saying they're that person believes there is some business representation on the Viva thing. So I'll try to get some details on that for you.
Love it. We're happy to hear that one as well. And happy that you guys all chose to spend part of your Wednesday morning here with us on The Morning Voice, talking all things local Tucson. We had Ben Ryan from Divine Vobine. So go out and check him out over there. Sheriff Lamb, some great discussion with Matt and all things happening locally over here. Get out there and support those local convenience stores as well too, guys, because they might not be around for Tucson's 251st birthday if we don't go out and support the guys that are willing to support us. Thanks for listening, and have a great day. I'll see you guys next week on The Morning Voice.